Thank you for joining us today. My name is Maria Malfa, and I am the President and CEO of the Training Associates, otherwise known as TTA.
And I'm Jocelyn Allen. I'm a Talent Recruitment Manager here at TTA, and I'm very excited to introduce a special co-host today.
Well, hello there. My name's John Lavager. I'm the Director of Learning Solutions at TTA.
We're very excited to have you today. And we're even more excited for our guest today, Joe Barrow, and our topic, adaptive learning. Joe Barrow is a Senior Vice President of Business Development at Area 9 Lyceum. Joe has 25 years of experience in academia and in the learning and development industry. He has been a senior leader at several learning companies, including The Learning Edge, Pearson, and at Blackboard during its most significant growth phase in the mid-90s. Joe's move to Area 9 several years ago has allowed him to continue to be an innovator and a learning leader in the industry. Joe is passionate about the learning and development space and the changing demands of learning technologies that impact both individual and organizational outcomes. Area 9 Lyceum is a leader in personalized and adaptive learning and enables clients to realize the future of personalized, multidimensional, and mastery-based learning. By combining science and decades of learning research, Area 9 is a next-generation learning platform. This mastery-based approach enables learners to become proficient in the knowledge and skills that are highly relevant to them, their teams, and organizations. The technologies developed by Area 9 are used by millions of learners of all ages around the world for K-12, higher education, and workforce education. Improving the learning process and linking retained skills to company objectives is Joe's key area of focus at Area 9, and we are excited to learn more from him today. Welcome, Joe.
Thanks so much, Maria. It's great to be here. It's good to see you and John and Jocelyn again, and look forward to the opportunity to chat with you this morning.
We're very excited, too. This is certainly a subject that I always am interested in learning more about.
I know we brought our pal John Lavager here today because you and John have a really good relationship. You guys have worked together in the past, know a lot about each other. So for those who don't know about Area 9 Lyceum, can you tell us a little bit more about who you guys are and what you're all about?
Sure, Jocelyn. So sparing the typical corporate 10 slides on company history, Area 9 is a business has been around since 2006, but it's important to note that the research that underpins our platform dates back to 1997 when our chairman and CEO, Dr. Ulrich Christensen, was in medical school. Our four founders were made up of two physicians and two computer scientists. And like I said, the history of the business dates back to when Dr. Christensen was studying, you know, in high stakes situations like emergency rooms. Why do people make mistakes under duress? So our executive team has vast experience in the space. They're regularly contributing to articles in Forbes and many other industry panels and things like that. We also have a ton of talent outside of just our core executive team, and we'll probably talk about that a little bit later. But, you know, former CEOs, people that have done both as customers of Area 9, large-scale global deployments of the platform. It's one thing to have a really good platform, but it's another to have people with experience both deploying it personally, but just overall experience in the space. So I think that's a big part of who Area 9 is. Statistically, we've had about 35 million users of the platform. The platform's in its fourth generation. Headquarters-wise, you know, we're here in Boston as well as Copenhagen, and then we have offices around the globe. Personally, I just hit my five-year anniversary with Area 9. So I'm really excited about that, and it's been really interesting to see both the growth of our business in terms of not just from a sales perspective, but more importantly, the types of people we're bringing in, the experience we're bringing in, that ultimately we can turn over and present back to the customer base to ensure a successful relationship.
Excellent.
That was a really great explanation. Thank you for that.
So are there any particular markets that you focus on?
Yeah, so we serve a number of different markets. I think historically, there are people that know Area 9 in the education space, given a prior relationship we had with McGraw-Hill there. But we serve a number of markets. So corporate, K-12, higher ed, the association market is a big one for us as well. But I think a lot of people are not aware that, you know, we have a number of vendor partners. So that's another interesting play for us. So not just people who can build in our tool, but also large-scale aggregators who work with other companies to deploy our platform. We've worked with companies that have trained or plan to train, you know, up to over 100 people to build in our tools. So when customers need to burst and scale, we have or our partners have the capacity to do that. Use cases in and all around training, whether it's in corporate higher ed or the professional space.
Okay, great. Are there any industries better suited for this type of technology?
It's an interesting question. You know, it's yes and no. I think I personally try to think less about an industry that's more on point and really try to focus my time on individuals or companies who think there's a better way or there's got to be a better way to approach training. And then kind of digging deeper into that, customers who recognize that many of the processes and systems they have in place are typically a result of the technology they're using, and they're willing to explore different things as a result. So in terms of industries we serve, any and all. So very, very high tech, you like cybersecurity, but also people are who are training employees that work on road crews. I mentioned K-12 as well. So typically the line of demarcation is, you know, if a business can afford a one-on-one personal tutor and do that at scale, don't do adaptive, because that's a great thing to do, but it's also very costly and it takes a lot of time.
So speaking to that, is there any particular size company that you focus on?
And I'd say typically the sweet spot tends to be really more as a matter of the types of companies that are coming to us. I'd say anywhere between 3,000 and 5,000 employees and up. Having said that, we have very, very large scale deployments with several hundred thousand people, but smaller customers in terms of size like Shinola, who are probably best known for watches and bikes and hotels and things like that in the greater Chicago area. So big and small.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Joe. I know we've had the opportunity to work on a variety of initiatives and see a lot of different applications. I think what would be really helpful for our listeners is just to kind of step back and tell us a little bit about what is adaptive learning.
Sure. And this is a super important thing. You know, as basic as it sounds, it's a really important thing for people to wrap their heads around and stay focused on if they're looking to explore this space. So I think in its most simplest form, you could describe adaptive learning as personalized learning at scale. And then it's really a matter of digging in and doing so with focus and purpose. So there's a ton of misinformation. Where companies really need to focus on is kind of getting below the surface. So one thing I always try to say is what we're not doing is that Netflix approach. So, you know, if you like this movie, you might want to see these other five. Personally, for me, when I look at those other four or five movies, that's when I end up asleep on the couch. What we're really digging into is that intra-task moment in time. How do we get John or Maria or Jocelyn through this course in the most efficient way possible? It's that in the moment intra-task adaptivity. So our platform is constantly making those decisions on what are we going to show this person next to get them to proficiency. It's much, much more granular, which is why you'll start to see the value of our experience and why it's, you know, they're not just numbers. There's a lot of meaning behind that. In terms of that granularity, we're analyzing upwards of 20 or so variables per minute to get to that level of detail. And as a result, it saves companies and employees a lot of time to really go back and make those hard decisions at that sort of Netflix level, if you will. Based on John's experience and what his role is and where he works, you should take these courses and put some mindful thought to that. You know, ultimately, I think we'll get there. We just don't think platforms are good enough to make those decisions as efficiently, as effectively as they can. So let humans put mindshare to that and let the platform do the really hard intra-task type adaptivity, which is where we play.
I like that reference that you gave about the Netflix recommendations after the first movie you watch, because sometimes I look at those and I'm like, where did you get that from? I don't want to watch that. I don't even understand how you came to that conclusion, Netflix.
You have an employee that's sitting there and saying, gosh, I just left a 7-year career at company A to go to company B, and 2 weeks in, they're making me take courses or suggesting I take courses of really basic knowledge that I know I already have. There's a lot of downstream implication to that. It's an important thing to note.
It is. It makes your approach very different. And I think you spoke to the relevance of that and why it makes a difference. Why is it really important for organizations to really think about adaptive learning and implementing a system like this into their company?
Well, I think if you spend any time reading industry literature, employees are demanding it, right? Don't make me take training I don't need. I become a lot less interested. Teach me the things I need to know in the most efficient way and let me get back to doing productive work. It's a huge win for the employee, and then clearly that rolls up to the business. We see that time and time again in the qualitative feedback we get from companies that have deployed the platform, in that, hey, I can feel the platform adapting to me, thanking for making this such an efficient process. To me, that's some of the most important reasons why they would want to do it.
So Joe, tell us how an organization should prepare for a discussion around adaptive learning.
Well, from my perspective, it's a classic deploy versus design discussion. I think oftentimes what I see is a company will sort of go into a typical mode of, we're going to explore new technology, let's get someone on the phone and see a demo. And while a demo can be great, I typically don't like to do that if I can get away with it until, you know, a second or third discussion, because there's a lot of things to chat through versus just the technology and the end game. There's a deep discussion to be had around the design of content, how content gets reviewed, how do you iterate new versions of the content, what sort of workflow happens on the back end to build content, and how is it deployed. I like to send, prior to a first meeting, some, you know, what I would call like an 80-20 deck and get all those basic questions out of the way and then really dig into those things. So in terms of how an organization should prepare, personally, I think a lot of those topics are really important because oftentimes they're not thinking about it when you look at, say, an LMS, because they're not necessarily relevant. There's a lot of self-discovery that will happen through the evaluation process in some of those key areas. And I think they're really important. If someone's really interested, those are things to start to dig into before you have a first discussion.
Excellent. So our listeners can really visualize how adaptive learning can look in the organization. Can you walk through a few examples for us?
Sure. So some projects that I've personally been involved with, I spend most of my time in the corporate space. I tend to navigate to companies in more regulated industries. I've had some really interesting work with a major U.S. air carrier across several parts of the airline. So in flight operations with pilot training. So outside of just sort of product type training, a lot of the soft skills associated. So like crew resource management for a pilot, any and all recurrent training that a pilot may do. So think in terms of large SOP manuals and those types of things. Across network operations in an airline, not necessarily really sexy type training, but airport codes, terminology across different systems in an airline, load planning, all the things that happen in an airline to get it up in the air and safely back on the, or, you know, after it gets back on the ground. And then airport operations, so hearing type courses, you know, all the things across an airline, the business of aviation versus just being a passenger. So those have been really interesting types of projects that we've been on. We have several major airlines as customers. There are some really interesting press releases on our website with organizations like the American Heart Association. We've recently done and kicked off a very large scale relationship with the American Heart Association and Laerdal for a more streamlined personal approach to resuscitation training. So again, very, very high stakes. We have an excellent longstanding relationship with the New England Journal of Medicine and the NEJM Knowledge Plus for physician training. We're training in pediatrics, internal medicine, and family medicine. Some really interesting data around increases in passing of board scores on a first try after using our platform. I mentioned Shinola before, so they're interesting not just because it's a smaller company, but They do training on product training for watches and bicycles and a number of the other things they sell, but also in around a lot of soft skills on how do they approach customers when they come into a store? What colors of clothing can you wear while you're on the floor? So there's a lot of stuff outside of just product training. And I mentioned some of the other, you know, large scale banking deployments, a lot of safety and training with a very large scale oil and gas company globally. So the platform for me touches a lot of really interesting businesses, both in terms of what they do, the scale with which they do it, and then also a lot of the internal operations we've been able to impact in terms of how this content is deployed and reviewed, et cetera.
Great. Joe, can you tell us a little more about some of the banking examples?
Yeah, so that one's an earlier stage project, but it's a deployment that will ultimately get to, let's just say, well over 50 countries globally with a deep six-figure employment base. It's early stages in that we're doing a lot of the decisions around some of these other things I've mentioned around content development and review and how all that process works, some of the change management that's associated with that. So trying to recognize internal systems and processes and why they are what they are, and then how do we need to do them in the context of an adaptive learning platform versus, say, developing content in an external third party and getting it into an LMS, because it's a very different approach.
That seems fascinating.
What do these meetings look like when you're in front of the clients that you're serving, kind of talking about your platform, what Area 9 does? Who's in these meetings? Who should be involved for people who are seriously considering this? Are there certain titles, positions, stakeholders, same people every time? Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, I think it really depends on, is a company just exploring or has a company said, hey, we have a directive to move towards adaptive learning, right? So if it's the latter, I think they really need to consider bringing folks that run or know the inner workings of some of these other areas I keep referring to, like content development, review, et cetera, because if we're going to struggle in those areas, let's find out early versus kind of worst case scenario where you go down the road of just focusing on the end game and the technology and the end user experience, you have a signed contract and then realize when we get into that deployment phase of, gosh, there's a lot of stuff behind the scenes we never thought of. So if a business can bring some of those other roles to a first meeting, that's great. I think those first meetings are all about two very simple questions, how and why, and then dig deep into both. So those are two questions I personally focus on a lot. And I would suggest that someone that's exploring adaptive should keep asking those as well. So for me, it's how are you doing what you're doing? How? Why do you want to change? Why? And then I can typically find out a lot of really good information, some of which may be, hey, here's 10 things that this business hasn't thought of. And I really need to spend a lot of time trying to provide some education before we get into, you know, what a demo may look like. If they have the time and the resources to bring a number of those other parties to the first meeting, that is ideal. But as long as we address a lot of those topics and that information can get disseminated internally afterwards, that's fine too.
I'm sure there's a lot of discussion up front. Once the customer decides to go ahead, how long does the typical implementation take? And it probably isn't typical.
Right.
Yeah. So it's a class, how long is a piece of string, right? One of those deployment questions we typically get, hey, what are the best practices? Can you send us a sample project plan? I think in terms of deployments as, you know, once you've worked with one company in one industry, you've worked with one company in one industry. So when I get asked for something like a sample project plan, I really push back to say, like, I know we're going to install and figure the software. We're going to build workflows and we're going to certify designers and we're going to bring in partners potentially. And that's easy. But I have no idea what that's really going to look like until we really start to dig in. So it can be, you know, standing up a course can be, let's say, a 4 to 8 week process and getting people in it can be super quick. And you can build and scale a deployment that way. You don't have to build everything at once and deploy and push it all out at the same time. So I think it really depends on what is the business's appetite, how fast can they go, and then also what is the appetite across different segments within the company. So we may start with ethics and compliance. We may start with diversity. We may start with sales. And then once they start seeing the data, how efficient the platform is, they can then take what they've done and scale it across the rest of the business quite quickly. Right? They don't have to spend as much time doing buy-in. Versus other companies that know they want to do this, maybe the deployment takes longer because they're trying to do it across the business out of the gate.
Great. And you mentioned, Joe, in previous conversations that you do have a large content development team, correct?
Yeah, so I think there's two ways to look at that. We have, I'd probably say, around 50 or so designers in-house. Because we do a lot in medicine and have a long history in medicine, we have a number of designers that are MDs. So we have the subject matter expertise to write and create content specific to medicine. But as I said, one of the ways we can really scale is, or two ways, we very much support a model where we would certify designers on the customer site to build themselves, right? Put them through a certification process. Once you've done that, you can build as many courses as your heart desires. And or if a business doesn't have a design team, we have certified a number of people across various partners that we can bring to the forefront as well. Scale also will come in the form of third-party companies that have taken their existing content and we have converted. So if you spend time on our website, you may see press releases from organizations like Chart Learning or Science Media, where, you know, I think the Chart Learning relationship is about 80 courses in soft skills that are all ready to go. You know, you could light those up in a matter of hours. So it really depends on how fast somebody wants to move and the types of training they're interested in.
Great, thank you.
Way to be adaptive, Joe.
There you go.
Yes. So Joe, as organizations evaluate adaptive learning and organizations that provide that modality, what expertise should these organizations be looking for in an adaptive learning platform and company?
It's an important question. I think if anyone Googles adaptive learning, you'll see a ton of stuff. There are companies that have been around for a long time, like Area 9. And I think in a very good way, there's a lot of new companies, right? It's good for the space that there's new ideas and just continuing to raise awareness for what adaptive learning can be. I think some critical things that I look for, if I was to say get into a relationship or potential relationship with a business, I talk a lot in terms of the experience of not just the experience of our management team, but how long have they worked together, right? So an adaptive learning project is going to have a lot of moving parts. It's going to be much more fluid than a traditional, and I'll use the example again, a traditional LMS type deployment. So personally, I think it's really important for a business to have an executive team, not just with a lot of experience, but with a lot of experience working together. I think obviously the maturity of the platform itself and how many people have been through it speaks to how battle-tested it is. And then I also think experience in the deployment, not just, let's say, a traditional project manager who may have a lot of PM experience, but some of those other roles like a chief learning officer or several chief learning officers that are on staff, former customers that have rolled the platform out in earlier iterations that can see behind corners that a potential or a new customer might not even know exists. So I think those are really important things to consider that just they clear a lot of hurdles before they get too high.
Absolutely. So Joe, as organizations go to implement adaptive learning, what have you found have been some of the key issues that companies need to dig into? Things they probably didn't even think about.
Yeah, so I think there's several things that organizations will experience as they deploy an adaptive platform that they may not typically have to think about if they deploy another type of system in learning and development. So handling end user feedback on the content, for example. So we provide learners the ability to give feedback on the content. Well, that then presents an opportunity for a designer to edit things or to get a sense of what was the learner thinking when they read this question, right? So that's a really interesting thing, but it's something that needs to be monitored, right? And how frequently will they do it? Who's going to do it? When will they push updates to the course, et cetera, et cetera? Those types of things from a simple thing like feedback become very relevant. The overall content review process is a really important topic. Within our platform, we provide the opportunity to do all of the content review within the authoring engine itself, right? So there is no build the course, package it up as a PDF or print it out and email it to four or five different people. The process is much more efficient, but that process requires thought and mindful thought about who's going to be doing those reviews and when and why. Overall content development is quite different. There isn't always the need to do, say, a storyboard on the front end. It's really focusing on granular learning objectives and then writing good quality probes or questions that are tied to those objectives and creating relevant learning resources, right? So again, digging into the objectives, creating good probes and questions and resources, and aligning all those different things together. One of the areas we really try to focus on with businesses is the way we deploy, in the sense that traditional project management typically doesn't work for us, or maybe a better way to say it slows down a deployment.
Why is that?
I'd say many of the decisions that a customer is going to make are uncharted territory. And if we each have, you know, a significant number of people on the phone trying to figure that out in real time, it grinds the process down. Think of it in terms of like an airplane needs speed to stay in the air. Typically, our teams on the call are much smaller than someone may experience, where we have people digging into business. If someone says they want to do something, we're always trying to get to what is the business need behind it? Not the problem, but what's the business issue we're trying to solve here? And then typically we can do that a number of different ways versus here's a problem, build something to fix it. And our traditional approach to project management slows that process down. So it's another thing, you know, in terms of how we deploy that's probably unique to a customer. Never seeing the many, many people on the back end that are doing all the build versus the one or two they may be used to seeing on a phone call in a traditional approach.
So Joe, for organizations that already have content and they already have courses and they're potentially seeing the advantage of leveraging adaptive learning, how do they go about getting that content into the adaptive platform? Are there any efficiencies there to avoid having to recreate it from scratch?
Yeah, so there's no easy button to get existing content into the platform. And it's something we see overwhelmingly in terms of the majority of projects we do. It's taking existing content and re-engineering it and getting it into the platform. So in large part, we use AI to do the heavy lifting associated with these kinds of things around content development or re-engineering. I think one of the misnomers with adaptive learning is most of the artificial intelligence is around analyzing someone's freeform response to say, is it right or is it wrong, or did they answer this correctly or not? We don't do that. We use AI to make the content development process as efficient as it can be, so we can allow designers to spend mindful time thinking about design versus cutting and pasting things. So to specifically answer your question, we have several tools we can use to expedite that process. And it's a longer tail discussion about how they work, but I'd say there's several ways to use some of these ingestion tools to take PDFs and PowerPoints and videos and much more efficiently get them into the platform. We also have some really interesting tools. We call them content robots, where you can ingest, let's say if you took, for an example, in medicine, like an intro to pharmacology, you know, one of those big 5,000 multiple choice question books that you'd see to study for like a GMAT or an LSAT or a medical exam. We can configure these robots to ingest that type of content, which would typically reside in, say, a CSV file, and import it at scale and create thousands of questions very, very quickly using some of these AI-based tools. So there's a number of options there. It really depends on what is the state of the content itself. Should it be re-engineered at all, or should they start from scratch? And then, you know, where's the opportunity to make it better or make it more efficient once it's in the tool?
So Joe, it sounds like the adaptive learning platform is capable of so much and can be leveraged in so many different applications. It almost seems daunting, but is there an easy way to start this process?
Yeah, so it's an important discussion to have, and one we certainly have with all customers. We've talked about some of these really high stakes projects where we're doing some amazing things and our partners are doing some amazing things. But one of the other things we talk about with, you know, maybe a large company that has a lot of content but not a lot of human resources to build, or a smaller organization, like, you don't have to be so complex out of the gate. Something as simple as multiple choice questions and fill in the blank questions, right? So with our engine, and literally with a check of the box, you can take a multiple choice question and have it presented in probably 10 to 15 different ways, depending on, you know, is it going to be one or two columns, or are you going to present the answers one at a time and they say yes or no, or is it going to be in groups of three and you have to pick the right one? You can set the number of distractors. So if you have one question with, let's just say, eight distractors, you can present that question in so many different ways. And that's all you do. Or to be able to take something like a simple fill-in-the-blank question and turn it into a short free-form response with a click of a button. So a business that has that type of content can easily get it into the platform and have a really positive adaptive learning experience, where they're going to get learners to proficiency. They're going to move away from, hey, you got 80%, you passed the test, but not really know if they learned anything. So they're going to get the value of the platform. They're going to get the data that the platform produces, and the whole process will be much more efficient. And then once they become more comfortable with the platform, they can see the different things they do, then you can grow. And we certainly have businesses that do that as well. So you can jump in the deep end, or, you know, start in the baby pool and splash around for a while. Either way, you're going to have a good adaptive experience, and you can grow as much as you want or need.
So organizations can see value on the platform very early on, and they can build upon it. Okay, yep. Great.
Joe, you just stated, as Maria looped in, that seeing the value in the adaptive learning platform can come very early on. Is there a typical path that an organization tends to follow as they start to see the value in using the platform?
Yeah, so I think the most important thing to consider here is, you know, how does the company approach the deployment? And I can tell you, for me and the rest of my colleagues, the way we look at this is something I heard from a gentleman on a podcast named Angel Rebo. It's that the second the ink becomes wet, we become a liability, meaning the customer took a leap of faith to partner with us, and it's our obligation not only to get them where they need to be, but to see value far beyond what we discussed in the sales process. And that's why having a team with experience is so critical, so you can get there as quickly as possible. Now, how does that happen and when does it happen? I talked about sort of starting small. If all you did was multiple choice questions, you're going to see data that you never saw about what people know and what they don't, and where they have misconceptions about what they know. You're going to see that people are learning quicker. So all of that happens the second they take their first course. So it can be as immediate as once people start going through modules. And then it's a matter of, how is an organization built to scale? So if we start in one department, do we go to another or multiple, right? And then the value that they're seeing will start to grow exponentially. If an organization is already a customer of some of our other content partners, well, we can flip that content to adaptive very quickly. So in terms of the speed with which they see the value, they don't have to wait for development time because that content's already been done. You know, we can just bring it in and put the right company logo and color schemes on the content that's already built, and they can light it up and put it into their instance of Rapsode immediately. In parallel, they could certify their own design team so they can continue to build internally and not have to rely on Area 9 or one of our partners to build. So the more they do in that regard, the more value they see. The speed with which that can happen will certainly vary. I think it's more important to think about the different levers an organization can pull to achieve that value in the most efficient or quickest way possible.
That's a great kind of segue into the deployment piece of this. And what you're saying is that the value that you see and how quickly you see it has to do with what you're doing while it's happening. And so what do you think that the best practices would be to utilize while this program is in deployment?
I think the underlying piece that ironically sometimes gets neglected is the data and what decisions can you make with it. So, you know, we spend a lot of time around decisions in the deployment stage. And from Mary and I's perspective, I see a lot of my job is taking the data and doing not necessarily a quarterly business review, more frequently with that than that, especially at the front end, to make sure they understand what some of the reports mean and what could they possibly do with some of that data, or what changes could they possibly make in the course based on the real feedback they're getting. Oftentimes, you may see organizations making decisions about courses and content based on what they think people want versus the hard data that's telling them in real time. So I think that's one really important thing for organizations to think about and to continually revisit. The data doesn't lie, so make decisions based on what we know to be true, or don't. If it's working, don't change. Those are some of the really important considerations from my perspective.
So Joe, organizations that have fully bought into adaptive learning and that you've worked with, I know you've had many, many implementations. You know, once everything's reached steady state and they're starting to collect their data and people are starting to learn, what's some of the feedback that you get from those clients? What are some of the realizations that they've had?
Yeah, so steady state's an interesting term. I think we're constantly continuing to evolve the platform and bring new partners in. So I think steady state is something we should consider to be kind of fairly early on in terms of once we've established the content development process and the review process. And then it's a matter of what do we want to stack onto that around other partners, or starting to think about, do we want to build out competency frameworks and do project-based learning on top of, say, a traditional e-learning module? Once we get to that point, organizations will start to realize the value of a lot of the decision process we went through across the different pieces of the platform. Right, so the end user experience in Rhapsode Learner, right, that's pretty straightforward. And then why do we have our own internal authoring engine in Rhapsode Curator, and all the different things we can do in that platform around workflow and content development and review that build in so much operational efficiency to the business that they may not even know for the inefficiencies that exist currently. And then lastly, around the management of the end users and creating classes and putting the right assignment classes and how we can automate all that. And then most importantly, the data that they'll start to see. So you'll see the value of those three different pieces that function as one, but there's a reason that they're separated, not only from a security authentication perspective, but how it lets the different groups within a business work independently while still being closely tied together.
Awesome. And as organizations listening are trying to figure out, you know, does adaptive learning make sense for us? Are there some self-identified criteria that they can ask themselves to see if in fact adaptive learning makes a lot of sense to pursue or at least explore?
Yeah, I think you'd be hard pressed to find an organization that says they don't want better data from their learning and development experience. You'd be hard pressed to find a company that, or a business or a school that says we don't want to be more operationally efficient, and it would be amazing if we could save a lot of time in the process. The challenge is in doing that, right? So I'll oftentimes see that when I prepare for a meeting and I'll read the CEO's letter to shareholders. If I really break down some of the things, it often falls into those three buckets when they get to the L&D section, if indeed there is one. The challenge then is, do the people really want to do it? And are the right people in place that can impact that type of change? So those typically, when we think about the end game, I always think in terms of data, efficiency, and time as massive improvements for the business that they can leverage in all sorts of different ways.
Yeah, I would even argue effectiveness as well. You know, as I've seen the platform demoed and, you know, utilizing data and to see an individual's learning path and to know that they've demonstrated proficiency on a particular topic seems incredibly valuable to a lot of organizations, especially with high stakes content.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's something that being able to prove that people are learning or show someone, especially someone that may have been in at a company for a long time or in their position a long time, hey, here's some really important areas where you thought you knew it. You were really confident and you didn't. And here's how we're going to help you get through that. And then more so, how the platform can help you maintain that knowledge over time. Right? So just like a tutor comes back to your house for a second visit with your child, oftentimes they're going to say, hey, last time I was here, we had some struggles on these two or three topics. Let's revisit them before we move forward. And that's why we don't just focus on passing the test. It's all about getting to proficiency. So the four of us taking that same course have different levels of knowledge currently, or prior knowledge or understanding. And we may all take the same course and, you know, John, you get through it in 20 minutes and Maria takes 10 and I need 40 and Jocelyn needs 15. That's great. That's exactly what you want. Let us have our own personal experience and then let the platform keep us up to speed over time.
Well, it certainly seems like this is the way of the future, meaning the future is now. I love to learn more about adaptive learning. It's certainly an incredible product and you have had so much innovation over the last several years.
So, you know, as it relates to, you know, the future of learning and a number of the industry articles that you'll read about the future workplace, and you'll see it all over our website of just, you know, four-dimensional learning and why that's so important. It's important to teach someone knowledge, but skills and character and meta-learning are all critical as well to get a sense of that whole person and to keep people learning and moving forward. So that's certainly a big focus of Area 9 and where we spend a lot of time doing research. You'll see that in folks that are on our advisory board as well. You know, overall, I just love to say thanks so much for the opportunity to spend time with everybody this morning. It's always exciting for me to chat about adaptive learning. My job is to help provide people information about what this is. And if that leads to doing business with us, well, that's great. If not, hopefully I've helped inform somebody a little bit and they'll continue to do their research and, you know, we'll see where things go. But thanks again for the opportunity. I really appreciate it. And we'll look forward to staying in touch and chatting again in the future, I hope.
Great. Thank you so much, Joe. That was very fascinating.
You've certainly given us all the information. You did exactly that. People are informed, and I hope that adaptive learning starts booming a little bit more. It makes so much sense, and it's obviously very, very good for the future of the organizations.
Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
See you guys again.
Okay.
Thanks, nice to meet you. Take care.
Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
For more information on today's podcast guests and how they can help your organization, please visit www.thetrainingassociates.com.
Bring Out the Talent is a Mudhouse Media production.